This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Bismillah, walhamdulillah, wa salatu wa salam ala rasulillah, wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa barak wa salam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I hope everyone's doing well, inshallah. So I'm going to try to talk about a bunch of different things tonight, just because next Monday I'm not going to be here. As I mentioned in the last halakha we just finished, I'm going to be flying out to Turkey on Monday, inshallah, for a relief project we're doing with children who evacuated from Gaza. May Allah grant them ease and end the occupation that's taking place there. That we're going to be assisting during Ramadan as one of our charity projects, people who are in medical need from Gaza who are in Turkey. I don't know if we're going to have somebody who will cover this part of like the Monday night thing, but we'll try to get somebody to do that, because one of the people I was hoping to have come in were to cover two topics. One was just around nutrition, to have a nutritionist come in and somebody to talk about the fiqh of zakat. Because I know a lot of people give their zakah in Ramadan, which isn't a requirement. Like, you don't have to give your zakah in Ramadan. You have to give your zakah when it's due in the year. But we'll see. So if you can keep an eye out on the email list, it'll kind of give us, give the insight on that. So there was three things I wanted to talk about today, or actually a few different things, but we'll see as much as we can get through, inshallah. The first one I wanted to start out with was just talking about dua, because Ramadan is a big part of Ramadan, is we're just making duas. And the dua in and of itself is like a very subjective act, but to give an overview, there's different hadith that really emphasize like the nature of dua's importance. There's a hadith where the Prophet ﷺ, he says, "Du'a huwa al-ibadah." The dua is worship, similar to the hadith we were just looking at in the Arba'in of Imam Nawawi, "Ad-dinu nasiha," that religion is sincerity, right? "Al-hajju arafah," that hajj is arafah. It's giving like a big sense of emphasis. So worship is a lot more than dua, but the Prophet is saying it's like a big part of what worship is, what makes up ibadah. Another hadith says, "Ad-du'a mukh al-ibadah," that dua is the essence of worship. But in Arabic, the word mukh doesn't mean like essence in the way we understand essence to be, but mukh is like your kind of skeletal system, your nervous, system. And so what the hadith is saying is like dua is a very cerebral act. It's not meant to be something that's just mechanical or rote, And we'll talk about really tonight a bunch of different things relevant to this act of prayer, supplicating to the divine. But it's meant to be in your own words, in your own language, so that there's that much more of a sense of presence like within it. So there's a verse in Surah Al-Ghafir, it's the 40th chapter of the Qur'an, it's 60th verse. Can people pull that up? So 40, 60. Does anybody have it? You read the English, the Arabic? Chapter 40, verse 60. You can read the English if you can't read the Arabic, but somebody read some of it. I'm so sick of hearing myself talk. No, not because of that. I've been sitting in this room since 4 o'clock. We did like an undergrad halakha and then the last one, and I'm just like annoyed at hearing my voice at this point. Yeah. Are you also? Were you nodding your head in agreement?
No.
It's okay. You can. I don't mind.
I was just
looking
back.
Yeah. Does anybody have it?
Verse 60.
40-60, yeah. Yeah, look at that. Friendship forever. Go ahead. So this verse, وَقَالَ رَبُّكُمْ وَدْعُونِي أَسْتَجِبْ لَكُمْ, it's like very expansive in this kind of understanding of dua. And you want to start to know like where the Qur'an says what things. So you're building a relationship with the Qur'an, right? And then you read like the entirety of the chapter. So وَقَالَ رَبُّكُمْ وَدْعُونِي أَسْتَجِبْ لَكُمْ, and your Rabb says, call upon me, make dua to me, I will respond to you. It's a divine promise. Do you know? And you'd want to be able to recognize, like, the language here is really important. Rab in Arabic, if you were to look it up in a dictionary, like, its definition, the word Rab is not, like, Lord the way that we translate it as. But the word Rab, if you were to pull it up, it would say Rab, you know, means Al-Malik, like the one who is the owner of something. Sayyid, like the one who makes the decisions about it. Because you can own something, but you might not decide how it's used, right? Like, the IC owns these chairs, but you're deciding where they're placed and how they're sat on, right? I own my television in my house, but my kids decide what we watch. Do you get what I mean? Right? So you can own it, it doesn't mean you get to decide how it's used. So Rab means Malik, Al-Malik, and Sayyid. Rab means Al-Mun'im, that he's the giver of the ni'mah, the giver of blessings. Rabb is murabbi, right? The way in the Quran it says, وَقُلْ رَبِّرْحَمْهُمَا كَمَا رَبَّيَّانِي صَغِيرًا, that they say, be merciful to them, like meaning your parents, as they did nurture me when I was younger, right? So كَمَا رَبَّيَّانِي, right? That they cultivated, they took care of me. So Rabb is like your caretaker, your nurturer, the one who provides care to you. Is Qayyim, is the one that holds everything together. The Rabb is the healer, the mender of all things, right? So your Rabb is saying, call upon me, meaning Allah wants you to make dua to him. And then he's not leaving anything out of place. Astajib lakum, I will respond. Divine promises are always true. So there's no kind of mincing words here. So if one was to ask, well, what's the point of dua? One, God wants you to make dua to him, to call upon him. And two, he's telling you he will respond to it. My reflection upon the divine comes a lot through various experiences I just have in the course of my day. So for example, when we go for Umrah every year to Mecca and Medina, you all should come and join us. And if you've gone before, you should come again. And I'm standing on the roof of the Haram in Mecca. I'm at the masjid and the Kaaba is in front of me. There's like millions of people there, you know? And it's very easy to feel very small in that moment. That in a sea of millions of people, how is it that my prayer is being heard? When I've taken my kids to New York City playgrounds, I don't know how many of you have children in your life. You just saw this little baby that was here before, right? Whoever is the mother of that child can tell you that she can hear her kid anywhere. So when I take Kareem and Medina to like the busiest of New York City parks, where kids are making like all kinds of noises, you know, and I don't know if you've ever been to New York City parks before. And all the kids running around, and people are like doing stuff. There's always guys like weightlifting in the, you know, the playground, like you know, and people are like, I mean, it's strange, New York City, right? So there's a lot of different noises. But if I'm on this end of the park, I got two kids. They never want to do the same thing ever. Do you know? And I have to be able to keep an eye on both of them, right? Like, this kid does not want to be here, clearly. Do you know what I mean? So my kids, one wants to be over here, and one wants to be over here. And I'm seated now in a place where I can only keep my eyes as best as I can on them back and forth. But the minute I hear one of my kids cry, I can hear them through the entirety of the playground. Just like most any other parent can do that as well. You might sometimes get faulted a bit, like, was that my kid? But when it is yours, you know it. If I can hear my children in a crowded playground, Allah can definitely hear me amongst the many voices that are calling upon him. And when I stood at the top of the Haram, looking at the Kaaba, thinking how small I am, also in being able to recognize in that moment instantaneously just how grand my God is. That it's not how is it that Allah could possibly hear my prayer in the midst of all of this, but taking away what my insecurity and anxiety define and taking what the Quran says as being true, in the midst of all of this, Allah is hearing not only mine, but every prayer that's being prayed. Do you see what I mean? In that regard, you want to be in a place where you start to think out for yourself, like dua in this nature. Allah wants you to make dua. So I'd like you to do for a couple of minutes right now, whatever you have, a notebook. If you didn't bring a notebook, you can pull out a phone. What are the du'as that you make? Because embedded in your du'a is going to be an understanding of what's important to you, but also who you know God to be. Because when you ask, you don't want to ask just for like Jannah. You want to ask for Jannat al-Firdaus. You're asking of God, right? Like, don't ask for like the bare minimum. Ask with a sense of the majesty of the divine that you are asking of. But in order to get to that place, you got to first think out, well, what are the du'as that I actually make? So if you take a few minutes, just write those down to yourself. Pull out a notebook at the top. What are my du'a? Not the ones that I should be making, but the ones that I do. And if you don't make any du'a, like, you'd want to think, like, well, why is that also the case? Do you know? But we'll take 2 minutes. What are the du'as that you make? And then we'll come back. Just like 2 or 3. We'll start that list. And then when you go home, you should build upon it. Okay, what is that like so far for people? You don't have to say what you're making dua for, but just to kind of engage in that reflection, the things that I make dua for. Like, what does it tell me about me or who I know, the one that I'm asking of? Like, what is that I'm putting there? Any thoughts or things that come up for anybody? Yeah.
Free Palestine?
Free Palestine? Yeah, I mean, inshallah. I mean. Yeah, and so that's a part of it, right? Like, if you want the rain to fall from the sky, why would you not ask the creator of the rains? Right? That's what it goes down to. So when you get to this place where you're asking for these types of things, it gives an indication of who you know your God to be. If you make dua for others as well as for yourself, why do people make so much dua for people in Palestine, in Sudan, right? Why do they make du'as for people who are oppressed or held down? There's a sense of love that's there. Do you know? You have to love yourself enough to make the du'as that you need to make for yourself, not the ones you just want to. Does that make sense? Like, you have to love yourself enough amongst everything that you love to pray for the things that you need, not just the things that you want. You want to be audacious in your du'as, like bold, to be able to understand and recognize again who it is that you're making du'a for. So we're going to go through a couple of things, like the how-tos of du'a, because there's mechanics to it. The same way there's mechanics to your prayer, right? You stand and bow and prostrate. You don't start by prostrating and then stand. We just yield to the form, because these are time-tested practices that go into like the highest potential of spiritual kind of ascension. Do you know? So one of the things that we're taught is that when you begin your du'as, like, you praise God for it, right? The Prophet ﷺ heard a man supplicating during prayer. He did not glorify Allah, nor did he invoke blessings on the Prophet. The Prophet said, "He has been hasty." Then he called the man and said, either to him or to someone else, "When any one of you prays, he should begin by glorifying and praising his Lord, and then he should invoke blessings on the Prophet, peace be upon him, and after that he should supplicate Allah for anything he wishes." So there's a hadith that says, "Kullu amrin la yabda'u bi bismillah fahuwa abtar," that any affair that does not begin in the name of Allah, then it's cut off. In another variation of that hadith, the word abtar is replaced with the word akta. In another narrations, the word bismillah is replaced with alhamdulillah. When you have the words abtar and akta, the difference between it is, if you visualize it, one is talking about being cut off from like the front, and one is being cut off from the back. But what is being cut off from is barakah. You're taking away like blessing from it. So part of the formulaic nature is that you are going to start Bismillah walhamdulillah. Something just as simple as that. You're rendering consciousness because you know who it is that you're making dua to fundamentally. And I said this in the last session, if people were here, we're talking about sincerity to Allah's book. Sincerity to the book of Allah necessitates knowing Allah through his book. Not like the way we sometimes conceptualize God to be unconsciously. So when you are invoking Allah, you're invoking Allah for who he tells you he is. And you have to build that relationship in such a way that ba and bismillah has like so many different utilizations grammatically. One of the meanings of ba and bismillah is isti'ana, that you're seeking assistance, help from the divine. And isti'ana is a certain kind of help that like you've done what you can do. And it's like, I can't do it without you. You know, I need you to do this. The ba also denotes that everything is from Allah. So when I sit down to eat a meal, I think about how remarkable it is that the egg that's in front of me, what did it have to go through in order to get to my plate? It didn't just pop up out of nowhere. But I recognize everything that had to be put into motion for me to have this cup of water, to have anything of what I just ate. There's a lot that goes. It's all in the ba, in bismillah. And then you send blessings on the Prophet, alayhi salam. This is the second kind of grouping that goes into it. So in Surah Al-Ahzab, it's the 33rd chapter of the Quran, verse 56. Can people pull that up? So 33:56. So there you go. Does anybody have it? Oh man, somebody's having fun outside. Do you have it? Can you read it?
Inna Allah wa malaikatu yusalluna ala al-Nabi. Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu sallu alayhi wa sallimu taslima.
Can you read the translation?
Yeah. Indeed, Allah confers blessings upon the Prophet and his angels. O you who have believed, ask Allah to confer blessings upon the Prophet and ask Allah to grant him peace.
So it's a sunnah of the divine to send peace and blessings upon the Prophet. What's really interesting is there's a hadith, Ibn Umar radiallahu anhuma, he narrates that the Prophet ﷺ says that indeed Allah and his angels send blessings upon those who eat before fasting. Right? That the hadith says literally, إِنَّ اللَّهُ وَمَلَائِكَتَهُ يُصَلُّونَ عَلَى الْمُتَسَحِّرِينَ, that Allah and his angels send blessings on the people who take suhoor, right? Which is, you know, that could be any one of us, right? May Allah make us from amongst them. So it adds to the barakah of it. So here, like, the idea with this is that du'as that are made praising God and sending peace and blessings on the Prophet are always accepted. So formulaically, you start in the name of God, send praise upon God, send peace and blessings on the Prophet. You make dua for the thing you want to make for, right? Then you send peace and blessings on the Prophet again, and then you praise God at the end of it. So what you've done is you've sandwiched your dua in between duas that are accepted, guaranteed, increasing the likelihood that if what starts and ends the dua is accepted, then what's in between is also accepted. Does that make sense? It's part of the how-tos, the etiquette of dua. When you're making the dua, you want to be firm in the dua. The hadith says, the Prophet ﷺ says, when you are making dua, do not say, O Allah, forgive me if you wish. O Allah, forgive me if you wish. You should be firm in your asking, for there is no compelling him. You say, Ya Allah, forgive me. Right? The dua that Aisha radiallahu ta'ala anha is taught in anticipation of Laylatul Qadr, Allahumma innaka afu tuhibbul afwa fa'fu anni, that, O Allah, you are the forgiving, you love to forgive, so forgive me. It doesn't say, like, if you want to, right? It just says, just forgive me. Do you know? So you have a sense of, like, concreteness in the dua. You know who it is that you are asking of. You be firm in the dua. Then there's focus in the dua. The Prophet ﷺ says, make dua and be assured of it being answered, and know that Allah does not answer a dua from a careless heart, which is not concentrating. There were scholars of the past who said khushu', focus, was a necessary part of prayer. That if you didn't have khushu', your prayer wasn't valid. That wasn't the majority of people, but that was some people's perspective. So dealing with distractions is important because dua comes from the heart, not just from the tongue, right? So you want to deal with distractions as best as they can. And this is going to be what really catches people. When you sit down to pray, what is it that's going to make your prayer a little bit more all over the place? And how do you anticipate that? Right? Like, my kids are not this young anymore, but they're still, like, crazy kids. They're 8 and 11. When my son was, like, from 3 till 6 or 7, and we'd stand to pray, kids follow us in our prayer. Have you ever seen my son Kareem? Even now when he's 8, like, moving, I don't even know what he's thinking during the salah. But when he was, like, 3 or 4 and a little older, we'd be praying. He wakes up super early in the morning. So Fajr till like the time he's in bed, he's standing next to me. Sometimes he's like shaking his butt back and forth. He's slapping me on like my backside. You know, he like one point, I'm not even joking, one time I was prostrating and he leaned over and kissed me on my cheek. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you can't do it. And he's super cute, right? That's not a distraction. That's my child. I'm not going to, at the end of it, yell at my kid and be like, you're ruining my prayer. What's wrong with you? No. I just have to understand that it's a different aspect of focus and spirituality. Focus is not that there's complete silence. When we're taught to be the imam, we're taught. The prophet would shorten prayers when he heard the cry of a child because he didn't want distress to come to the mother. How can he do that if you can't hear the cries? If you make a mistake in the prayer, somebody corrects you from behind. You can't do that if you can't hear them. You go from standing to like bowing and prostrating, but when you were supposed to stay kneeling, you got up. Someone's going to say subhanallah. You have to hear them say it, right? Does that make sense? So focus in and of itself is going to necessitate understanding that the causes of distraction have a definition. One, there's a lack of ability to pay attention. What's causing the lack of ability for me to pay attention in my dua? Because you're not praying at that time. You don't need wudu to make dua. You don't need to be sitting in congregation to make dua. You can make dua pretty much anywhere. So what's creating the lack of ability to pay attention, right? Before I got married, I had like tons of guys that just lived in my apartment with me. You know, you all have been, some of you, to our place, the lounge. If you've been to our actual apartment, I used to live in a place where, like, literally, like, for a while, when my son Kareem, it's his bedroom now, where these other guys used to live, we'd go places and all kinds of random men would say to my son, you know, I used to sleep in your room. And my son had no idea. He was like, Baba, like, how many men lived with you? I was like, a lot, Kareem. I don't know what to tell you. One of my friends who used to live with me, it was literally like Maghrib time, short window of time, and we had to pray. And it was during the NBA finals, and in my apartment, the TV like faces the Qibla. Like when you're facing the Qibla, the TV's in front of you. So I'm like, hey man, it's Maghrib time. He's like, okay. And we stood up, and I was like, you gotta turn the game off. And then he just muted it, right? And I was like, we can't like have it playing. He's like, no, it's fine. I'm like, no, it's not fine. You know? You deal with the distraction, right? This is why the hadith says there's like no prayer when food has been served. It doesn't mean you don't pray, but your mind is going to be thinking about the pot that's on the stove, right? This is why it's silly, you know? And some of you do this because you don't want to make wudu again. So you sit and you clench up your whole body, hoping like nothing comes out and you break your wudu. So the entirety of your prayer, you're more focused on, man, I better not fart. Man, I better not fart. Like that's what you're making the focus of your attention then. Do you get what I mean? Right? Isn't it silly when you say it out loud? Wudu is its own spiritual exercise. You don't make wudu just to pray. You want to be in wudu as much as you can all the time. It's an elevated state of being. But the lack of the ability to pay attention is sometimes caused by these things outward to us. I got to run back. My phone is like vibrating. Who texted me? Who's calling me? You know, who's sending me a notification? I got to go look at all the messages. Did anybody respond to my message in this group that I'm in or on this post that I put up? A second part to distraction is the lack of interest in the object of attention. Like you're not going to make dua if it's not important to you. If you don't think you need to do it, then you're not going to do it. And third, the attractiveness of something other than the object of attention. Most of the thoughts that pop up in our head when we're praying are usually not unimportant things. I'm not sitting in my prayer thinking about, you know, la, 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 what's for TV, dinners tonight, and this and that. I'm thinking about the fight I'm having with my brother. I'm thinking about how, you know, I'm stressed by this thing or that thing. What's crazy is how many of those thoughts stop when you go into sajda. You should just experience that and think about when you're standing versus you're prostrating, when the thoughts just disappear. But also in understanding how much of your time is spent unfocused. Like my kids, it takes them not so much now, but when they were a little younger, it would take them like 45 minutes to eat one bowl of cereal. Like, I couldn't understand. I'm like, just eat it. It tastes gross after 10 minutes. It's all soggy and like, why would you want to wait that long? So I'd be like, guys, just focus, just focus. And they'd be like, yes, Baba, yes, Baba. And after like a week or so of this continuing to happen with different kinds of meals, and I was like, just focus. And they said, yes. And I said to them, like, do you know what it means to focus? And they're like, no, Baba, right? I was like, well, whose fault is this? It's not theirs, they're innocent. You want to think about how you have consciously learned to be focused versus how much of your life has existed unconsciously being unfocused. The gross majority of most of us is in this state where we don't have focus in what we're doing. And you can train yourself to be focused, to be in a place where you have that kind of mental strength and mental edge. If you've ever played sports, for example, that's like what they teach us, right? I was supposed to play sports in college. Most of my like high school career, it stopped. I had multiple concussions when I was a senior in high school. But I'm not a large human being. Do you know what I mean? So I had to be in a place where a lot of it required like knowing like the mental aspect of it. What's going to create a distraction for me that's going to take away that edge? That if I couldn't be physically larger than someone, I could still be mentally stronger than them and be able to engage at that level. Do you get what I mean? If the majority of our time is spent being unfocused, it doesn't mean thoughts stop. Do you know? And most of our thoughts exist just automated. You think 12,000 to 70,000 thoughts in a day. 96% of them are repeat, meaning they're on autopilot. 4% are done consciously. So that's what's going to get you here. What's going to create distractions? What's more attractive to me elsewhere? What are the things that are going to get in the way? So what I want you to do is take a minute now and reflect to yourself. What are some of the things that I know create these distractions for me that disrupt the focus of my heart? It doesn't allow for my heart to be present. Sounds from the street, the spaces that I'm in, right? You got to pray your prayers whenever you're like the window comes in. But if you're not strategically planning and then you get stuck, it's one thing to say the bus got delayed, the train was delayed. How am I going to pray Maghrib in 5 minutes in the train? Well, like you just do your best, you know? But that's not because of you. But the importance of it, the lack of interest in it in relation to something else, you know you're going to leave your home. You know that these prayers are going to come. You know that there's certain times that dua is more accepted. So why didn't you plan a better place to pray? Where you could be in a place where you're not like worried or you're looking for like just a place to kind of bang out some kind of physical movements. Do you get what I mean? What's going to disrupt your focus? So think about it for a minute, and then I'm going to ask you to turn to the persons next to you to talk this out. What disrupts focus and what enhances focus for you particularly, so that we can kind of benefit from each other on this? Because this is what's going to make and break like our dua, the presence of our heart. So what's causing something else to get in the way? So let's take a minute to just reflect for ourselves. Okay. If you could take 2 minutes and just turn to the persons next to you, if you don't know their names, share some names. What is it that disrupts focus for you? And what are things that would enhance focus for you? Right? What allows for you to be attentive? And what kind of takes it away? We just talk for a few minutes and then we'll come back and discuss. But go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay, so what are some of the things we're talking about? What are some of the things that create distraction? What are some of the things that enhance attentiveness? What do we discuss?
Manifest it in our life, like to bring it to our future, to help us do. But we go distracted, focusing on how can we do it. Things that would help us to focus would be like trust the process and leave it in God's hand and be sure that it's gonna be fine. And we don't need to do that much because God can take care of it. And we can also use the dua itself to help, to ask God to help us make better dua. We can pray to have a better prayer. So this
one. Great. Other thoughts? What gets in the way or what can be helpful? Yeah.
Something that was said, that I don't know, I think like a lot of people probably feel this, and I think in the past I felt also, was like this idea of kind of like futility of like if it was like going to happen, like Allah would have provided it already, or if it's like predestined, then it's gonna happen anyway. So like, almost like stopping ourselves from making the dua for it.
Great. Other thoughts? Yeah.
To clear your working space, no matter where you are, in order to focus and have better mental clarity, and also minimalism, so you can work on things faster and find things faster. When it comes to that time.
Great. Yeah. Anything else? Other thoughts? Why are you smiling? Do you want to say something?
This is the second time I've said it.
No.
I like your face.
That's so nice. Thank you.
I can share that.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Yeah.
Is that one of those things you do? You just kind of smile because you want us to call on you, but you're not saying you're
very
thoughtful. Yeah.
I don't want to distract from the halakhas. I will share.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think I'm going to share something we talked about in our circle, which is echoing back to Fatima and her group share about how thinking about things that occurred to us before, whether it's previous conversations or just our schedule.
Yeah, so you want to think, right? What are the elements that want to keep me from being distracted from God? And how are they built? Dunya, the materialistic world, waswasa of shaitan, hawa, desire, right? The nafs, the lower self. These things exist in a frame where they're real and they're going to be vying for your attention. So even where you can be like pulled towards something that is futile or pointless or detrimental, you can also be pulled towards something that's of lesser benefit in comparison to something of greater benefit. Do you know? So if I'm feeding people to break their fast in Ramadan, that's really good. But what if in the midst of that, I'm also the preventative obstacle from them praying in the nights in Ramadan? Do you know? Like, do you get what I mean? Right? So it's not an either or, it can be a both and, but to think preemptively, right? We're going to gather in our home. I want you to make dua in my house. It adds to the barakah in my home. I want us to all pray together. I buy into the whole thing. What's creating distractions, anxiety, unease? We've never done this before. People come over, we eat, we stay up till the middle of the night, but we talk to each other. We don't talk to Allah. It's going to only be awkward once or twice, and then it'll be over it. And it'll create a deeper bond amongst you and the people you're breaking fast with than you could have imagined ever before. because now you're connecting in a lot of different ways simultaneously that have benefit to them. There's a social experiment that I like to utilize as an example of this element of distraction with a man by the name of Joshua Bell. And Joshua Bell was put on the DC Metro subway early one morning during rush hour, and he's playing the violin. And tons of people are passing him by during this rush hour traffic, and he said nobody's really paying attention to him. Joshua Bell stays there for multiple hours, and he says when children stop in front of him, they just don't move. They're fixated on him, and the adults that are with them have to pull them away, and he can see them looking over their shoulder, and they can't see anymore. He said one old man stopped for a little bit and then moved on. And in the time he was there for hours, he collected maybe $10 or $20. What makes it crazy is that this man, Joshua Bell, is considered one of the foremost practitioners of the violin in the world. The violin he was playing that day was valued at $2 million. And he had sold out concert hall after concert hall in the area of the DMV, where tickets started for hundreds of dollars a piece. And all of these people could have watched him for free. But none of them took it in because they were distracted by something else. Something else was pulling them away from it. The companions are told at the end of a prayer to just recite Subhanallah, Alhamdulillah, Allahu Akbar 10 times each. Not the like 33 times that we know, but just 10 times. He says, alayhi salam, you do it 10 times each over 5 prayers. It'll be written for you like tenfold over. So 30 times 5, 150 is 1,500 good deeds on your account. And then he tells the companions, a time will come where people won't do it. And they say, why? Like, it's so simple. You could say these words on your fingertips in seconds. And the Prophet says, because their hearts are going to be pulled by something else. You have to figure out what pulls your heart. It can even be something that's good. I work down the hall from this prayer room. I'm not saying this to you. I have to say to me, what fundamental reason could I possibly have to not pray all of my sunnah and nafl prayers? What reason would I have to not be able to pray every prayer in congregation while I'm in this building? Do you get what I mean? And I could sit there. One of you could come and say, life is tough. That's great. It doesn't have to be an either or. It's a both and. What's going to take me away from what it is that I need for my own spiritual benefit and gain? Do you get what I mean? And how do I build it in to my routine? If you can build focus, right? Like, how many of you did the gratitude letter that we talked about a few weeks ago? You did it? Yeah? How was that for you? It was good? Why is it good? Does your face mask not allow for you to use words? So think about it as an exercise, right? You did it. I know that Nadia did it. Like, did anybody else do it? Yeah. Okay. Did anybody have a terrible experience doing it? No, right? That was nice. When you did it, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that you can also create a journal. That's what I have. A gratitude journal.
Amazing. Gratitude journal. What's happening in the exercise, content aside, is you are focused also for the portion of time that you're writing this thing. Do you get what I mean? That's why notebooks are so important. You come and you sit and you just absorb like a sponge. You're not a sponge. There's all these other things vying for your attention. The minute you can have something that becomes a focal point of your attention, it allows for you to be that much more present in the exercise. And as you're building gratitude through the gratitude letter, you're simultaneously building mental strength because you're engaged in an exercise that requires focus and attentiveness. Do you get what I mean? Okay. I want to read through a few other things in relation to dua. So good times to make dua, these are just hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. The Prophet says, in the last third of every night, our Rabb descends to the lowermost heaven and says, who is calling me so that I may answer him? Who is asking me so that I may grant him? Who is seeking forgiveness from me so that I may forgive him? The last third of every night. The Prophet says, the closest any worshiper can be to his Lord is during the last part of the night. So if you can be amongst those who remember Allah at that time, then do so. Allah's messenger was asked, O messenger of God, which supplication is heard by Allah? He said, the end of the night and at the end of the obligatory prayer. So you can't gain it without kind of the preceding act. So you want to make the dua at the end of the night, you got to be up at that time. You want to make the dua at the end of obligatory prayer, you got to pray your obligatory prayer. The Prophet said, two will not be rejected. Supplication when the adhan, the call of prayer, is being called, and at the time of rain. These are moments of barakah, a blessing. So when the adhan is being called, you want to be in the places the adhan is being called. You could do this in your house, right? If you can't get to a masjid, you can't get to a masalla, call the adhan in your home. If somebody says, why are you calling the adhan in your house? You're the only one in your house, still call the adhan. If not for any other reason, so that you can then make the dua at the end of the adhan being called. Do you get what I'm saying? You don't have to overthink it to a place that creates obstacles. How am I going to get to, like, you know, the masjid 5 times a day? No, man, just call it wherever you're at. Do you know? 3 people's dua is never rejected, the Prophet says. The fasting person until he breaks his fast, and in another narration, when he breaks his fast. The just ruler and the one who is oppressed. In another hadith, the Prophet says, 3 du'as are surely answered. The du'a of the oppressed, the du'a of the traveler, and the du'a of the father, the mother upon their child. The Prophet said, there is no believing servant who supplicates for his brother or sister in their absence where the angels do not say, the same be for you. So good times to make dua, other hadith, between the adhan and the iqamah. Like, this is a good time to make dua. An hour on Friday, they say, is a hidden hour on the day of Jum'ah that you make dua. When you're in sajda, this is the closest you are to the divine, you make dua. Drinking zamzam is the time you make dua. Laylatul Qadr, may Allah enable us to seek it out, witness and benefit from it. It's a night you want to make dua. Some of the etiquettes of dua, you want to try to be in a state of wudu. It doesn't mean you have to be, but if you're in a state of wudu, it's like a heightened state of being. And you want to challenge yourself, right? Try to be in wudu as much as you can, as often as you can. A lot of people think wudu is just the entry point to salah. It is. You got to be in wudu to make your salah. But you can also just be in wudu to be in wudu. You face the Qibla. This is a way that you can make dua. So the direction of the Kaaba, you're facing towards it. You raise your hands. The Prophet would sometimes make dua with his hands raised like this. Sometimes he raised his hands and you could see, like, kind of his underarms. Sometimes he would just raise one finger when he was making dua. And sometimes he didn't raise his hands at all. Do you know? But when you conceptualize, like, I'm raising my hands, right? Who does this? Do you know? If you've ever been to a place where someone on the street is asking of you, they're giving you an insight that, like, I need something from you. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not just mechanically doing this, but I'm understanding. I'm asking the creator of everything for something. I am an abd. Allah is Rabb. Doesn't matter. Our prayer is beautiful because everybody is next to everybody. It's not the rich people stand here and the poor people stand here. Our prayer, everybody is with everybody. Etiquettes of dua, you can't ask for haram things. You'd have to know what's haram in order to do that. If you don't know, inshallah khair. But if you know something's haram, you can't be asking for it in your dua. It's against, like, the etiquette of the dua. Don't ask for haram things. Some of the etiquettes, what are you smiling like that? What are you praying for, Solo? Part of the etiquette of dua, you ask by a deed you have done, right? There's a hadith where the Prophet, and this isn't like an overtly emphasized thing, but for example, there's a hadith where three men get trapped in a cave. A boulder comes to the mouth of the cave, and they say, let's make dua to Allah by an action that we undertook, for saying, if we did this for your sake, then move the rock out of the way. Right? And the rock moves after each one. You can look up the hadith. That's like another way to make dua. Use language you are comfortable with, right? Our prayers are done in Arabic, like our salah, but your dua should be done in whatever language you're most like fluent in, so that there's sincerity in your words, you know? People ask me, how did you learn how to speak like this? I said, I don't know. And I tried to think about it. I studied Latin for like 6 or 8 years and other languages. My father is a doctor, but he loved to read. He wrote a lot of poetry, you know, when we were growing up. I'm sure I was like impacted by some of these different things. But like, I've been asked to give talks in other languages and it's atrocious. Like, it's terrible, you know? I cannot speak in Urdu or Punjabi or Spanish or Latin or Arabic or any of these languages the way I talk in English. So I'm making most of my du'as in English because that's just the language that I feel most comfortable in, you know? So make these du'as in the language that you're comfortable in. And if it works for you, like, write them out before so it helps you to be focused. I can't tell you the number of people that we fly to Mecca. They're standing in front of the Kaaba and they're moved, but there's always people who look at me and they're like, what am I supposed to pray for? I'm like, what do you mean, man? You came all the way here and you didn't think about this? You know? Life is about moments in our tradition. Allah forgives the woman who's a prostitute for giving water to a thirsty animal. She's given Jannah. It's moments. What distracted the mind and the heart from being prepared? Ramadan is coming. Why we're talking about this? Like, make dua to God this Ramadan. Don't get stuck in the mechanics of it. Get to a place where you're actually praying to your Creator. And what are you going to ask of Him? You want to mention the Asma al-Husna, like the divine names of the God that we've been taught. So call upon Allah. Ya Rahman, increase me in my mercy and compassion. Ya Rahim, bestow your mercy upon me. Do you know? Ya Latif, be gentle with me, be kind. Part of the etiquettes of dua is to repeat like the dua a few different times. Like the Prophet sometimes would repeat things 3 times. A big part of the etiquette of dua is you're not impatient with the acceptance of dua. And this gets really hard for a lot of us. Your God is not a birthday cake that you are making a wish upon, nor is He a genie in a lamp that is there to do your bidding. You don't have to believe it for it to be true, but Allah is in control of everything. So where trust comes in is that you make the dua and you know that God wants what's best for you. So you're going to either get what you're asking for, you're going to get something better than it, you're going to get something in the hereafter rather than the here and now. Allah knows best. So it's not based off of, like, and you can keep asking, right? My son, every 10, 20 minutes, Baba, can I watch this now? Baba, can I do this now? Can I do this now? He's a kid. What am I going to do? Get annoyed with him? So you too can keep asking and keep asking. But you want to be able to understand divine timing is in the hands of the divine. And sometimes things don't work out and we don't get it. I got married when I was about to turn 29. My wife was 32. I'm now 41 years old. I don't know if I'm the oldest person in the room or not, but I'm probably one of the elders in the room, which is crazy because I always used to be the youngest person in the room. And I would be foolish to assume at 32 that I was the first person my wife ever thought of getting married to. And I know for a fact she didn't think that she was the first person I thought I was going to get married to. When those things didn't work out, it really did not feel good. And it's okay to say that. But I also can't imagine being married to anybody other than the woman I'm married to. Do you get what I mean? I made those du'as, but Allah, like, knows best. You get what I'm saying? And so we just have to be in a place where we recognize who it is that we're praying to. And then you want to say Ameen, like, to your du'as, right? You know? So there, say Ameen, right? The brother said, like, free Palestine. Say Ameen. You know what I mean? Right? So you're in a place where you have that kind of interaction and engagement with it. Okay. That took a lot longer than I thought it was going to. So the other things I want to get to, we're not going to get to tonight. But what I'd like for you to do is two things. Spend some time, like regularly, reflecting on who you think God is through the du'as that you're making to God. Do you know what I mean? And really, like, sit down. And if you need, like, this aha moment of being like, why am I praying for this? You know? What is it that I'm really asking for? Something that's going to distract me from my family even more? Something that's going to have me stuck in an office for even more time? Something that's going to create more stress, more kind of confusion? Like, what am I really asking for in this? And then think about what's absent from the du'as that you're making. You can make du'a for dunyawi things, right? رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً. That, oh Allah, give to me in the dunya hasana, things of goodness, things of beauty. But you also have, wa fil akhirati hasana, in the hereafter, I want things of beauty. Wa qina adhab an-nar, and protect me from, like, the pits of chastisement. Embedded in these du'as are expansive understandings of potential scenarios. That du'a in the Quran is juxtaposed to people making a du'a that is Rabbana atina fid dunya, and that's it. And both of these groupings of people are people who are on pilgrimage. I've gone to Mecca numerous times. I've literally stood with people as they're holding on to the cloak of the Kaaba, and all they're asking for is dunya. If you seek out Laylatul Qadr in Ramadan, don't let it be something that all you're asking for is a portion of some part of this world or relief from the fear of maybe you might lose some part of it for doing something moral or just. But be in a place where you really, like, think, what is it that I need, man? What is it that I'm really trying to pursue and chase after? And then how am I ready to accept what it is that comes along with it? If you made dua, Ya Allah, make me someone who memorizes the whole Quran, you're probably not going to wake up tomorrow morning and suddenly you're like, I know the whole Quran. That's not how it works. The steps that are needed to get to the place where you memorize it will be opened and facilitated. You have to choose to take the openings. So if you ask for a spouse that's of a certain type of categorization, then you got to be ready to be the person who God is going to put that person in there in your life. You want a job and you're asking simultaneously for protection from hellfire. The two things have to go hand in hand. Do you get what I mean? They can't have contradictory coexistence. It's not possible that you want Jannah and protection from Jahannam, but then you also want the job that's going to give you the pathway to Jahannam. Do you get what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So you spend some time with the du'as and reflect upon them, and you think, how are they answered? Do you know? Because the number of people that sit in my office and they're like, I've been praying for this thing and I don't know what's going on. Maybe God hates me, which is Shaitan's biggest tool. At the end of every single thing, I think God doesn't like me. What? Why would God make you if he didn't like you? Do you know? Do you think God made a mistake in making you? Is that like, who do you think your God is? Do you know what I mean? But this is what Shaitan wants. Every single juncture, I made a mistake, Allah must hate me, I'm the worst Muslim. I did haram, I'm the worst thing, I'm going to hell. Like, I made this dua, it's probably I'm not getting it because I'm a bad person. No, like what do you mean? Where does the notion come from? You gotta break it down because it's now creating misconstrued ideas twofold. One, you don't understand who God is then. And two, you don't understand who you are also. And the combination of those things is going to be just a lot of inward chaos. So bring your mind into your dua. Why are you asking for what you're asking? And the number of people who sit with me in my office, they're like, I made dua for these things. And then we get to the end of the conversation as they've let it all out. And I'm like, do you see how what's happening is actually the answer to your duas? Like, you asked for God to bring this person to you and to give you clarity. So now you have to confront the idea that the elders in your life, they're not God. They don't know what they're talking about. What other ways do you want it to be evident? When you're in a place where you're seeking, like, certain things, Ya Allah, if he's not good for me, then, like, take him away from me. And then the next day, you know, he told me he doesn't want to talk to me anymore. Like, I don't get what God... Well, you made the dua, man, that if he's not good for you, then take him away. And he got taken away. So what's the, like, hard thing to understand? I don't say it to people like that because it's not going to be nice to them in that kind of moment, right? But it's like, that's what you asked for. You see what I mean? And if you asked for certain things to come and they came, like, what is it then that's like the missing piece to this? What's helpful sometimes is when you have somebody to talk to about it. So you're not in your own head kind of thinking out, right? So as obnoxious as I sound right now, that's not how we would talk in my office. You can let it out. We can decipher some of it, say back to you a lot of what you said to me so you could hear it differently. So you're not intertwined with like your waswasa and shaitan and all this other stuff. And then it's not getting you to a concluding point that says, I'm not right for this religion or this religion is not right for me. Do you get what I mean? Ramadan is a time you want to make dua. So make like specific times. If you got to be in an office, just 5 minutes of your day, just sit and raise your hands. The etiquettes of what we talked about, they're not fara'id. They're not obligations. You can make dua without wudu. You can make dua without facing the qibla. You don't have to raise your hands. So you're not sitting in your office like this and people are like, what are you doing in there, right? You just make your dua. That's it. Any reason you have not to do it doesn't make any sense. You can do it literally anywhere that you are. Just don't do it in the bathroom and everywhere else you're good. Do you get what I mean? Right? So 30 days and 30 nights in this month, and you have time. Like, go through it. The times that we mentioned, there's a lot more. Inshallah, it'll be something that you feel like kind of the experience of. Okay, so I want to take a pause. If everyone can just turn to the persons next to them really quick, what are some of the things we're taking away from tonight? And then we'll wrap up, inshallah. But go ahead. Yeah, we can close it off. Okay. Yeah, they're just like talking about takeaways, and then we're gonna wrap up in 2 minutes. We have what? We have bags. Oh, do you have them here?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell them.
Yeah,
be powerful. And then also Allah is not a great thing. Yeah, that like there's no like impatience with like, what is my job here?
Because someone wants to make an announcement about the vigil.
Okay, she can do that. Is she here? Okay. Okay, what are some of the things we're taking away from today? Any takeaways? What is this person? Yeah, go ahead. It sounds like you're doing pretty good.
Okay, well, I have to like remind myself. Sorry,
No, go ahead, please. Sorry, not to interrupt you. Go on.
I need to remind myself sometimes when I don't get something that I want or like I'm working really hard for. Like in my dua, I like remind myself of that passage in the Quran, and not even like a couple like days, weeks, months later, I'll like get something that's like exponentially better that I didn't even imagine. Like there's been a lot of times where an opportunity I've like asked for it, or like I've asked somebody who I thought would be like the best choice for like getting that opportunity, and then I got shut down, and then like a little while later I like get that same opportunity that I wanted but like from a different way. And so like intertwining that passage of the Quran with like the saying where it's like what's for you is for you even if it's like beneath two mountains, and then what's not for you is not going to reach you even if it's between your lips. And so I have to like tell myself that like even if I don't get what I want, like it's not for me. And then in my dua I'm like, Allah, wow me, like, you know. And then like even sometimes later, like there have been moments where I'll just like open my email, it's like you have been accepted into, and I just like burst out into tears. in public, but it has happened where I'm like, I did not even think that this was gonna happen to me. So you always gotta ask Allah to wow you, because He delivers.
That's amazing. Any other thoughts before we wrap up? Yeah, I think that's a good place for us to take a pause. Summon wanted to make an announcement, I was told. Do you want to come? You say, oh no?
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. My name is Summon. I'm just making a request. There is a 24-hour vigil starting Wednesday at 10 a.m. in front of City Hall until 10 a.m. Thursday. It's to urge our city council members to support a ceasefire resolution in New York City. You've probably seen there's been ceasefire resolutions passed in big cities like San Francisco, Chicago, but they've passed because there's been a ton of community pressure, and we've sort of not done that really well here because our city council members, folks that we would normally think would say something, have said either nothing or they've taken neutral stances. So we really need to put pressure on our city council members. So there's going to be a press conference at 10 a.m. until about 11:30 at City Hall. We're going to walk over to the plaza, we're going to pray Dhuhr Salah, and then we are going to have various organizations start reading names of the 30,000 Palestinians that have been martyred. We won't have the entire list because unfortunately we don't have all the names, but we're going to try. We'll be praying all five Salah in Jama'ah. So please, even if you're working in the area, you can just stop by to pray Salah, please do that. We'll also be praying Salatul Ghaib, most likely after Maghrib, and then we will be doing Qiyam. So about 2 or 3 hours before Fajr Salah, out in the park, we're going to do Qiyam. We're going to do Dua of the Oppressed for folks that want to fast on Thursday. We'll have Suhoor, inshallah. We'll pray Fajr, and then we'll end around 10 a.m. We're just really asking folks to share this on their social media. Come out for whatever portion you can, please. It's NYC, the number 4, ceasefire on Instagram. This is an interfaith, inter-everything effort. It's a grassroots movement, and there will be faith leaders from various organizations. Some city council members will be there in the morning as well for the press conference, and just folks from a ton of various organizations across the city. I think we have 40 or more orgs that are endorsing this action. So please come out, please tell your friends, try to come out, show support, and please make dua that it doesn't rain at night. Jazakallah khair.
Jazakallah khair. Tomorrow is Tuesday. So we're having like all of our regular halakas on Wednesday for the Sira halakha that I normally do. We're going to also have, because it's the last one we're going to do for a while because Ramadan is going to come and I'm going to be away in Turkey next week, so we won't have it that Wednesday. We're going to get like tea and like other stuff, so if anybody wants to bring anything or bake anything, if you come on Wednesday, we get more people than this on Wednesday nights usually, so just try to come out for that. It'll be nice. And I think post Ramadan, what we're going to try to do on Wednesdays or even for this is add like more of an element of just suhba, where people can kind of be in community with each other, really build like some connections with one another as well. I really enjoyed the iftar we did in my place last Monday, and I think that was something that people could really get a lot out of also. And we used to do a lot more of that before COVID, so I'm hoping we can get back into that as well. On Saturday, we have a women's summit that's taking place here that's almost sold out. It's for women only. We're doing it in conjunction with Malika, and they have a great lineup of speakers that'll be there. On Sunday, we're having our monthly convert brunch. It's going to be at Solo's place, so if you have questions, you can ask him. It's for people who are exploring Islam, people who converted to Islam after being not Muslim in a non-Muslim family, as well as people who are family members of people in those categories. So we limit it just to those groupings of people, as we do with certain other spaces that we have. Next Wednesday night, we're going to do a joint event between our Latino Muslim group and our converts group, that everyone's like welcome to attend also. And on Friday, on Thursday next week, I don't know if it's open to everybody, because we're not hosting it, but or if it's NYU only, but the wait, actually, I don't know if I can say this yet, because then it'll be public, and then I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say
no,
it.
No, we'll keep a secret.
Huh? You're going to keep a secret?
Yeah, we can do it.
Yeah? Maybe after I turn the camera off, we can do it. And then on Friday, we're going to do like a welcome Ramadan event. Myself, Sheikh Faz, mothers, we'll have a dinner. It's like a community dinner. So March 8th, we'll be doing that. And I'll probably share either a Jummah on Friday next week or at that event, like some of the images of the children we're going to be visiting in Gaza, from Gaza in Turkey. And their families that we're going to be trying to raise funds for in Ramadan. So it'd be really great. People just make dua that these projects are successful also. Because a lot of these people literally have nothing. We've been trying as best as we can, helping to get people like who are stuck in Sudan, out of Sudan, to places of safety, helping with people who are in Gaza to get out. But then they also need to exist like where they live, right? And so that's where we come in. Your risk isn't like what you possess. Your risk, your livelihood, is what you end up utilizing, you know? So just because you have a bunch of stuff sitting in a bank account, that's not actually your livelihood. You could be the means through which somebody else gets their sustenance and livelihood. And this Ramadan is probably one where you'd want to try to like continue to keep consumption in check after Ramadan. Because the less you're spending on your stomach or anything else, the more you'll have to give to other people, right? And it seems like it's just going to be a lot more people for quite some time that are going to need our help, inshallah. So make sure as you think of your du'as that you're thinking also about those that the world has forgotten. But come to these different programs and events, and if you could help volunteer during Ramadan, we'd appreciate it as well. We just need a lot of people to help out with everything, and we'll send out more info on that in the coming days, inshallah. Okay, barakallahu fikum. So hopefully we'll see everybody at different things this week and next week, and otherwise we'll see you guys in Ramadan if I don't see you other than tonight. Till then, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Yeah, turn it off.